And yeah, we're going to talk about passive network mapping today. Get it up, man.
This thing is P70.
Pentium 70, man. That's quality.
75.
Yeah.
Okay. Our talk is on the impact of passive network mapping in distributed environments. Next slide, I guess. Okay, to start out, I guess we'll talk about what network mapping is. And I guess what you say by network mapping would be scanning machines, finding OSs, what the machines are, how the network is laid out, what vulnerabilities exist, et cetera, et cetera. And there's two types of network mapping so far. We have an active method and we have a passive method. And an active method, an example would be nmap. You send out, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of packets that get picked up by an IDS just to map out the network. And you can get detected very easily. And what we're working on is passive network mapping. And with passive network mapping, you do not send out any packets. You are just the listener. You are just the watcher. And you were able to gather pretty good information and pretty much playing probably around 95% stealth. The only way that you'd actually be able to be detected probably by a program called Anti-Sniff. So, next slide. Okay, I guess we'll talk about methodology for mapping networks passively. And for the port, mapping networks passively, what we're looking for is we're port mapping, we're doing operating system identification, we gather topology information, we do traffic flow analysis, and we also do hardware fingerprinting. Okay, we'll talk about how we do our port mapping. For TCP ports, pretty much all we are doing is we are looking for SYN-ACK packets. Here, go back. Next slide. Okay, so to map TCP ports, what we do is we listen for SYN-ACK packets, and the accuracy is pretty good, so pretty much our sniffer just stands there and watches the packets go by, and when the three-way connection is completed, we just watch for the SYN-ACK packets and note the source port and the source IP address, and we're able to tell that port is open. And you want to talk about accuracy?
Yeah, accuracy problems with passive TCP port mapping would be flooding out invalid SYN-ACKs on a network from illegal hosts. And solutions to this problem is maintaining state, TCP state maintenance. That can also arise other problems, especially because passive network mapping is designed for high-speed networks. So we need to develop linear time algorithms to keep TCP state, because like say you're on a OC3 or something, keeping TCP state on like your standard data structures like linked lists or even an optimal binary tree still is not effective. It grows in memory very large, so we actually developed a technique. Basically it's a radex sort, and we're binning a hash of the outgoing SYN packet, and then when we receive a SYN-ACK packet back, we modify it a little and then also hash that, look it up in our hash table, and now know whether the initial TCP handshake was ever received for that connection. And that's about all we really could say for that. Oh. All right, UDP port mapping. UDP is generally overlooked, but it contains a lot of important information. A lot of routing protocols, multicast information is sent over UDP. So we might want to do some UDP mapping. Accuracy of UDP mapping, generally with active mapping, is pretty inaccurate. UDP port scanning, in general, is a hard thing to do because not all operating systems respond the same way to like a UDP connection. Sometimes you might get an ICMP port unreached, sometimes nothing, and sometimes you might actually get UDP packets back when that port is closed. Those would be problems. And solutions to this would be basically content filtering, listening on predefined sets of ports, and also content filtering the actual payload. Like, for example, passive DNS resolution, RIP version 2, version 1, routing information, et cetera. And next, OS fingerprinting, a background on OS fingerprinting. The history, basically, the first technique was designed, I believe, by Fyodor. You can look it up in FRAC. What was that? Oh yeah, Queso was like the first program out. A lot of people probably have heard of that. That was produced a few years back. Active fingerprinting is easily picked up by an IDS system. It sends out about 7 to 8 packets. They're predefined. You basically send out a SYN, SYNAC, any combination of those flags, and you get information back from the host, such as your TCP window, certain IP options. And that's about all there is for active. Passive methods of OS fingerprinting are currently being developed. The first one really that's out there is a combination of the TCP window size and the default TTL. Problems with this are if we're monitoring traffic on that's going through our network or originating from other subnets, our TTL is definitely going to be decremented. So once we get the packet, the TTL is not going to be at default. So, and there's really no way we could compensate for this. So we've been...
Yeah, pretty much we've just been rounding up the TTL. Say if it's the TTL is 60, we automatically round it up back to 64. If it's 110, we automatically round it up to 120, et cetera, et cetera. So by doing this, we, for example, Windows 2000 uses the same IP stack as FreeBSD now, and the only way that we were able to actually differentiate between the two is the TTLs. I believe FreeBSD uses the default TTL of 64, and Windows 2000 uses a default TTL of 128. So since we're able to do that, we can differentiate between different operating systems like that. Okay, spell topology information, take it.
Okay, I'm going to be going over the routing, some of the routing stuff, OSPF notably. Brief 60-second overview of routing protocols, or classes thereof. Distant vector routing protocols, Bellman-Ford model. This is RIP, IGRP, then EIGRP. BGP uses it, well, a variation of it. It's where you tell all your neighbors about everyone. So I would tell all the people in the front row how much it cost me to reach every other person in the audience. Because of this, each router has its own view of the network. Each one is going to calculate its own tree. Incidentally, really fast, split horizon is if I'm forwarding a packet. Poison reverse is easier. Poison reverse is if I can't reach someone, a neighbor, I just advertise my the hop count, say in RIP, as infinity instead of letting it phase out. Split horizon is if I'm routing packets through another router to a destination, I just don't advertise my, I advertise my cost to that intermediate as 100. Because you don't, it, that router doesn't care, basically. The problem with this is that if you only have one or a few, say, sniffers on a network, you're going to get different topologies based upon where you're sitting, and it can be problematic. Although, AMP's got some cool stuff with that later. Link state, OSPF, DECnet Phase 5, ISIS, NLSP, which is like ISIS for Novell, PNNI, which is ATM. This, you tell everyone about your neighbors. So I flood the entire network with how much it cost me to get to this front row of people. But because of this, you've got a database that's distributed across the network. Everyone has the same copy. For the most part, there are some caveats with virtual links and some other weird stuff. But for the most part, you can be at one place on the network and see exactly what the topology looks like. The other limitation is area partitioning or hierarchies. Link state databases, when you get a lot of routers, get big. So typically they support some sort of way of dividing up groups of routers within your autonomous system. OSPF uses a single backbone area and auxiliary areas off of that, or you can do a single level. ISIS is up to an 8-level hierarchy. I think NLSP is too. PNNI is reasonably arbitrary collection. Not really that important to get into that. So link state routing, those packets that I'm telling, that I'm distributing throughout the network to figure out how to develop my routing database, are per link, like say per port, at least one per router. So a given wire between two routers would actually have two link state advertisements, one from router A, one from router B. Just examples of the type of information that's typically contained in these. OSPF version 2 specifically. Oh, question? No? Okay. Current version is 2. It's protocol 89, runs on IP. It's a link state protocol, which has all those cool things I just talked about. Another great thing about it is it does periodic link state advertisement retransmissions. Although it seems like all link state protocols would have to, a lot of them shortcut. ISIS will send SNPs or PSNPs, which are sequent number packets or partial sequent number packets, that only contain enough information for another router to be able to check and see if its database is consistent. So you can be sniffing for days, and unless there's a reboot or data corruption or a new router comes up, what have you, you might just see sequence number packets and not get any good data, like what are the IPs on this router. But OSPF doesn't do that. It has this explicit acknowledgement, and it sends out the full packet every 30 minutes. Maximum age of a link state advertisement is 30 minutes. The metrics assigned for OSPF path costs are not load dependent, which is kind of cool, kind of bad, depending on what you're looking for. That would give you more information as to the policy of the network that you're mapping. And it's all clear text, which I don't really know of encrypted routing protocols being implemented widely right now. Link state converges quick, which means when there's a change in the network, link goes down, what have you, the rest of the network knows about it relatively quickly. So you can get a pretty good image of what's going on, not just where routers are, what their IPs are, who they're connected to, but temporal data. In OSPF, links must be bidirectional. So OSPF won't even communicate over a link that it doesn't receive something called a hello packet when the neighbors meet each other. So you won't even know about those. If you just basically got transmit to, say, a intrusion detection cluster, you won't even know it's there. The data will be going to it, but you won't see it via this. No automatic partitioning repair. I don't really know why I put that on there, but another property of it. These are the, to my knowledge, 7 types of link state packets. The important ones are the link state updates. Those actually have the information we want in them. Although I just want to mention NSSA area because it's got the coolest name I've ever heard. There's something in OSPF called a stub area. An NSSA area is a not-so-stubby area. I just did this a couple minutes ago. This is really horrible and probably bound to throw you off. But area 0 is the backbone, the backbone area. 2, 4, and 7 are the second level of the hierarchy down. And then area 10 is something on a virtual link to the backbone. Typically, this OSPF routing information will not be flooded past an area boundary. So imagine all this is one autonomous system. If you're sniffing in area 7, you're only typically going to get area 7 information. The part I mentioned before about virtual links confusing the issues a little is that they don't have to be connected to the backbone. You can actually forward their packets through another area. So if you're sniffing in area 0, it might look like area 10 is directly attached, depending on configuration. Now this is the 5 types of link states. Router links, that's what IPs are on what ports of this router. That's flooded throughout one of those areas. Network links are advertisements by routers on the behalf of networks. Just due to the way that OSPF uses multicasting on shared access media. Those are also flooded throughout the area. Network summary link and border router summary links are injected into an area, say from area 0 in the backbone into area 7, regarding routers and networks that are in the AS and reachable. Those are usually one destination reported per packet. And then finally, the externally reachable destinations are IPs outside of the AS, single destinations per packet as well. Those are flooded throughout the whole AS, but that also doesn't give you much information about the network you're mapping. I kind of went over most of this a little bit ago, but exactly what it gives you. One of the best things has to be alternative penetration routes. And when you start correlating that with outside guesses or knowledge, if you can find their backup link, do they watch it? If they do, can it handle, say, when the main link fails and there's a lot of data being pushed through it? Are there places where they're migrating networks, moving routing protocols? Does it just look like the marketing department doesn't know how to administer a router? You can find out a lot of places to get good cover, basically. Try to avoid detection, but that's after the passive stuff. The other is application layer detection. GateD and Zebra are the only two free, publicly available routing daemons that I know about that do OSPF. But that'll also tell you that they're not using a Cisco. Figure out if it's iOS. So you can do a little bit of hardware there and also application layer. By the way, I think Zebra is 180,000 lines of code. How much you want to bet there's a bug in there somewhere? And brief section on challenges. Data link layer, it's not always easy to get a sniffer on an optical carrier. And I'm not decoding that currently. But there are issues with the types of multicasting that they use because of the media. Went over virtual links. There's one more thing called implicit links, well, what I call implicit link state advertisement removals. When a link goes down, OSPF routers have the option to advertise that link with the max age. Can't remember what the value is offhand, but they can advertise it as max age, in which case the receiving routers take it and remove it from the database, but they don't have to do that. They can just omit it from their database descriptions. So the accuracy of the map that you get by just sitting there listening, depending on when you came in and when you started, may be inaccurate because of implicit removals. You may not see it. That can be overcome. I haven't done it yet. But I think that's all on my stuff.
Yeah, just a little note on RIP advertisements. People might not really consider the RIP protocol and information in these packets that useful. But there's a lot of things actually you should actually take a look at in RIP advertisements, such as partial topology mapping. Basically, by listening on your multicast RIP version 2 IP address, or standard RIP version 1, just standard broadcast, you'll definitely be able to know metrics to outside nets. without having to do such things like trace routing, if you wanted like a general idea of how far a target might be away. And also, creating link state information from distance vector protocols. Distance vector protocols by nature don't contain actual topology information, but simply metric to how far a network would be an estimate. But combining RIP advertisements from different subnets, we can actually triangulate basically decent topology from this. For example, like if host A is like 9 hops from host B and host A is also like 2 hops away from host C, then
you should have made a picture for this one.
Oh yeah, definitely. But then we could assume that host C is at most 10 hops away from B, and you have a nice little better picture of this. But that's all really about RIP. Oh yeah. Here's a decent graphical representation of an active scanning versus passive mapping. Highly technical. You can identify an attacker by a sword and a cape. And a passive mapper usually has big ears. But on another note, multicasting. Multicast traffic, if you're on a switch network, the amount of information that you'll be receiving from a sniffer is generally a lot lower. But there's a lot of good information on the multicast hardware addresses, such as DVMRP routers, OSPF, MOSPF, RIP version 2, a lot of video conferencing information. So basically, think about mapping IGMP. IGMP actually is the group management protocol for these multicast addresses. That'd be great in combination with topology mapping. We could mark out where these multicast hosts are located on a network. Just a note about passive DNFs caching. If you're passively mapping a network, you don't want to actively resolve DNS traffic at all. So then basically think about decoding DNS over UDP packets and creating a central database for this. Attacker versus defender, bind.
Yeah. Okay, I guess we could talk about the impact of network passive mapping from the attacker's perspective and the defender's perspective. And now, from the attacker's perspective, doing passive mapping is probably like one of the greatest things in the entire world, except the only thing you really have to have is access to a network where it's either not switched or you're on a strategic location on the network. But pretty much the attacker can watch all the traffic that's going by. They can gather all the information that they would ever need that they could use with MMAP or traceroute or anything like that, and they could compile a list of data that is just completely valuable without sending out any packets. Therefore, they would never be detected. From a defender's perspective, if they were using passive mapping on their network, they'd be able to tell when new machines pop up on their network that they didn't know about, and it's just like a much more proactive way of doing things instead of having to go out there and scan things. Also, I actually heard of an application of using passive mapping to do vulnerability analysis and everything like that without say a company has a big intrusion detection system at their company and they want to do some analysis without setting off their own alarms, they would probably use something close to passive network mapping to do analysis on their own networks. And let's go talk about active versus passive attacker. I think we've covered this too many times. The passive attacker has big ears and the other one wears a cape and has a sword. The active attacker is going to get caught, and the passive attacker, if he is smart and not a retard, he's not going to get caught. You don't really see the FBI raiding houses because people are just watching packets. They're usually going after them because they're scanning a bunch of machines, and that's why they're getting on the phone calls.
That's also not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. This is pretty much what we've been. What we've been working on lately. It's our whole passive network mapping suite. It's called Siphon. We've been working on it for, 3 months now. So pretty much it does all the passive network mapping methodology that we just explained here. We still have some things that we need to add in. So far it does passive port mapping, passive OS identification, passive DNS resolution, RIP topology, et cetera, et cetera. OSPF pretty soon, almost. Does hardware fingerprinting. So if the whole deal behind this is you can either run Siphon on a subnet and just monitor the traffic, or you could be running Siphon. And then, for example, say you want to check out what operating system that, OpenBSD.org is. You can run Siphon in one window and go to the other window and go to links, www.openbsd. blah, blah, blah. And soon enough, you will see that OpenBSD is actually running Solaris 2.6 on for the website, but we won't start like a whole war about that. So pretty much we can find out what operating system machines are running without sending out any illegitimate packets that are actually going to be picked up by intrusion detection systems. Yeah, it's all about the bandwidth. Future sounds of Siphon. What we're working on right now is implementing vulnerability assessment, pretty much what... watching the banners that go by the network, looking at the payload inside the TCP packets, seeing RPC transactions, et cetera, et cetera. Being able to map out the open NFS exports and some Samba and NetBIOS stuff. And we wrote this PowerPoint presentation an hour and a half ago in the CTF network, so excuse us for not having something that's a little bit more prepared. But pretty much the whole future of the Siphon project is we want to be able to open up a website where people can submit their logs, because we have a logging format where we can merge log files in together. And eventually we want to have most of the internet mapped out if we get people like you to run these on your subnets. So I don't know if... the whole CTF network. Yeah, we have logs from the CTF network. We'll be working on actually creating a graphical representation of the maps and everything like that. That's pretty much why we're working on the dynamic routing protocols, is because we actually want to have a graphical picture of what the network looks like, how many machines are on each subnet, which ports are open on each machine, what OS is on each machine, what vulnerabilities it has, and doing this without sending out a single packet is just like, I think it's great. So, yeah.
So when is the Siphon at home client
going to
be available?
I don't know. It's under development.
Yeah.
You have
thought? Yeah, I'll talk about it later. This is crypto guy.
Yes.
Can you guys know where you
IGRP? IGRP?
Yeah.
Oh, legal issues with that. CDP, I mean, definitely, there's the source out there possibly to decode CDP, but if Cisco finds out that we're decoding these proprietary protocols... No, the switch network traffic is just limited generally to multicast broadcasts, and unless you're on switch network that you're actually installed the software onto a router, then you could get a lot more traffic. Yes? Really, that's really up to your discretion, whether you want to install this on your own network or there's, to retrieve the information is going to be on the machine that you're passively scanning, yes, but we're assuming that you have legal access to the machine you're using. What was that? Excuse me? These are really different legal issues and morality issues we need to deal with. We just developed the software. Yes?
It seems to me like there'd be lots of applications for this in like a Tempest machine.
Ooh.
Tempest. Well, right, first of all, I'll start off. What did you have in mind?
If you can passively monitor stuff going on unshielded internet, or you can measure stuff going over, like, you know, oh, look,
well, actually, might be interesting. You're getting into like merging hardware with software. Well, sure. But one of the things that might be more interesting is that, like, right now there's a lot of in the consumer computer kind of area, not outside of government, which I'd have no clue about. There's a lot of soft tempest protection. People like I believe PGP has a viewer now where you can read your PGP mail in a soft tempest font, which is somebody monitors from outside with tempest equipment. Well, right. But let's say for the sake of argument that it works, correct? One thing that Siphon can do is you can compare Tempest and non-Tempest information, so information you pick up off of a network, versus what your Tempest gear picks up. And then you can see, you know, what are the differences here, what's really going on. That's more where it stands. I mean, I don't know if do we have any plans to, like, really build hardware?
Yeah.
On the other hand, there are things coming out like Bluetooth and stuff like that does wireless personal area networking. Of course, there's also the IEEE wavelength specification, which we'd probably be very interested in, I'm sure. So
I don't see why it's not possible.
Yeah.
A good idea. Some of the aspects
regarding information retrieval is beyond the scope of the tool, I think. It would make it office. I want a word processor, right? I want this intelligent data collection engine, but that doesn't mean that I need to have a program that draws graphics and can play movies and all at the same time. Bruce Coffey. Just general response to questions that were...
Way in the back.
I'm sorry, passively listen to a... well, you would have to be on a network with nodes that were received.
Actually, I wasn't specifying that we were listening to the multicast traffic itself, but the IGMP joins requests would be mapping, because those are definitely broadcasted, and we would be able to map out who is on this multicast group, not the specific data per se.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly why we're implementing the OSPF protocol. So, and we're going to, that's exactly what we had in mind.
First guy, Fatal. Okay.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear the question, by the way? Basically, what are we doing to make sure it stays alive, especially during very busy times and it's collecting and analyzing a lot of data? Two-part solution. Half of it is basically AMPS code, which is pretty tight and a little insane, actually. It does very fast logging with a delayed analysis with separate threads that will yield to load sniffing takes priority. The other is use good data structures. The routing information right now I'm currently maintaining in AVL trees with iteratively coded insertion and deletion routines. So it's reasonably fast. That'd be sweet.
Yeah,
run on everything. Cross compile, right?
Okay, right now this tool is available for any of the BSDs out there, and it'll run on Linux, and there's also a Win32 port that was written by Interrupt. Right there.
Stand up.
You're the man.
Give him a hand.
This Interrupt also ported Snort to Win32, and he also ported libnids, I believe.
And very
N-grep and D-sniff. He's sadomasochistic. All right. In the next public release of this tool, we will bundle with it the scripts that will allow you to dump the machine parsable format into a MySQL database or PostgreSQL or possibly Oracle if I get somebody to help me writing those scripts out. And we'll bundle PHP 3 scripts, possibly Perl scripts, so you'll be able to run this, dump it out to a web-based interface and browse it, you know, with any browser really easily. You'll be able to say, okay, list all hosts running Solaris out of my siphon logs, and then boom, it'll pop them all up, and you can just browse through the information, and it'd be pretty useful for statistical purposes. In addition, we're also going to look into bundling software that will allow you to generate graphical representations of how exactly the operating systems are distributed across the network, so you can see the percentage of machines that run Linux versus the percentage that run Windows NT, things like that. Browse.
If I had a switched environment and I wanted to run Cypher in that switched environment, the most feasible thing for me to install something like that would be on a machine that's already running something like IDS, because chances are that would be one span for it.
All right, can you give me a shorter version of the question to repeat?
I think it was...
Coexistence with intrusion detection systems?
Yeah.
It's actually good for intrusion detection systems. People are doing target-based intrusion detection. If you know what OS the end host is running, you know how they're going to reassemble overlapping fragments, and you're going to be able to reconstruct the streams more accurately. I was talking with someone from Hivermind, I believe, who's doing this. Hiverworld, pardon me. John or Jeff. Actually, it wasn't John Flowers. Sorry. Can I try again?
I mean, like...
All right, the question was, if I'm running... if I wanted to run Siphon on a switch network, right, the most likely place that I would want to do this is on a machine that's already running IDS, as opposed to using Siphon for the IDS, but putting it on a machine that's already running IDS, because it'll probably be on a span port.
Right.
So the question is, what is the feasibility of coexistence between Siphon and an IDS, which are both going to be sniffing?
The purpose of Siphon being black hat or white hat, or just in general?
Actually, either.
You know, I don't really see a problem with it. That would get into issues of performance, I assume.
Right.
Two things doing similar behavior, logging packets and trying to figure out what's going on. But unless there's problems with putting multiple devices in promiscuous mode via multiple programs, I mean, I don't. I'm not sure if I'm understanding what you're asking.
Yeah,
because it'll run side by side.
It's more of a performance question.
Okay, performance. Yeah. Depends on the machine, and with anything that's sniffing and analyzing data, any sort of network intrusion detection system, there's always denial of service attacks. There's always resource starvation. This would say half the cost of that. More likely. Actually, Siphon, I don't think, would be as heavyweight as some of the intrusion detection systems.
Yeah, I think it only uses up 1% CPU and only uses, I don't know, 5 megs of RAM so far. So we're doing pretty damn good when it comes to the architecture of the program.
Oh, yeah, at CTF, there were quite a few packets going around. His laptop was 99% idle.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I want to stop black hats from using this project, and Okay, quick question. I want to stop black hats from gathering data on my network. What kind of countermeasures are there?
You could use remote promiscuous detection techniques because, you know, the interface
like
is...
Like Siphon or Sentinel?
Sentinel, there you go, man. Screw it. No, okay. You could use anti-SNF or Sentinel, you know, both you remote promiscuous detection, whichever one works for you. I'd probably use Sentinel, but props a lot, though. I mean, I love those guys. Where's the dope?
Subterrain.net.
Actually, that machine was being co-located up in Berkeley, and the guys brought it down this weekend because we're moving it to a new co-location facility, and it should be up on Monday or Tuesday.
No, I don't know. We'll find it.
The guy's running around here somewhere.
Siphon is?
Siphon, no. Sentinel.
Oh, Sentinel. Yeah.
That's also being re-updated and stuff like that, so we'll have some more checks in.
You got a close affiliation with Cisco on this, but you know,
steer clear of their proprietary protocols. SPAN ports on Cisco switches. And if you guys are familiar with them, I suspect you'd probably be able to circumvent any anti-sniffing type opportunity. It's certainly because the hardware itself will prevent any outbound packets from occurring. I use it regularly. Impossible to detect if you trust the Cisco gear combination. You guys should probably think about combining the software with specific hardware for particular applications.
Yeah, I don't think it's that we have that we don't like Cisco, but Cisco may not like us necessarily. I don't know. They route packets. That's what they do, so they should be more than happy. It's just a standpoint of it, again, being a legal issue. So, yeah.
I found when you turn, because Simon's help work a lot with them, when you turn around and sell more of their boxes, they'll let you get away with murder.
Oh, okay. Sounds cool.
Like
OCDP,
etc.
Oh, yeah, CDP should be implemented pretty soon. You know, I really don't think we are going to run into problems there because.
If there's this legal question,
how about we do this, everybody? We get the CDP source code, we post it anonymously, and somehow find it, and you know, we could. Oh yeah, we just found this source code out there. You know, that's how we decoded it. But you know, honestly, I don't think we're really gonna have a problem with that because Etherreal already decodes CDP and all that other stuff.
Is there anyone else
want to
talk?
I'm done.
Any other questions? Okay, that's it.